Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am Charlton Doki, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Thursday, November the 25th, 2021. Dozens of people are reported killed following intercommunal clashes in Darfur West over the past 4 days.
The people of the 11 villages managed to escape for their lives between 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. They could not get any of their property along with them.
And authorities find 6 bodies of people who went missing after they were ambushed by armed assailants in Akobo County on Tuesday.
The second attack, then they abduct 3 children. Then the first attack, they abduct 1 child.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Dozens of people have been killed and scores of others injured in renewed fighting between farmers and cattle keepers in the Jebel Moon locality of Sudan's West Darfur state over the past 4 days. Witnesses say at least 11 villages have been burned down and more than 10,000 people have been forced from their homes. They say a majority of the displaced have crossed into neighboring Chad and are in dire need of humanitarian assistance. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Witnesses say the conflict started after herders linked to an Arab militia loyal to Sudan's rapid support forces in Jebel Moon allegedly killed a farmer. The incident occurred about 75 kilometers north of Al Janina town in West Darfur state, and witnesses say the local community, mainly made up of farmers, retaliated. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus by phone from Al Janina, Muhammad Ibrahim, a government employee at the Department of Social Development in Jebel Moon locality, says at least 26 people have been killed. He says more than 60 others were injured from Monday to Wednesday. Ibrahim, who escaped the conflict from Jebel Moon and arrived in Al Janina Wednesday evening, says more than 11 villages were attacked and over 1,000 houses burnt down and reportedly looted, including livestock. He estimates that 9,000 to 10,000 people have been displaced, and most of them have crossed the border into the neighboring Chad.
The people of the 11 villages managed to escape for their lives between 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. They could not get any of their property along with them. Now they are in miserable condition. They are all on the same level. No one has anything to offer the other people.
Ibrahim says it is possible the death toll might rise since the fighting continued into Thursday morning. Speaking via phone from Al Janina Teaching Hospital earlier today, Dr. Adam Zakaria confirmed the hospital received 12 bodies of mainly rapid support forces personnel. He says several wounded civilians also arrived at the hospital and are being treated. He says some of the injured are in critical condition.
I personally received 12 dead bodies, all of them in their military uniforms of the rapid support forces. We received 7 civilians who were wounded differently, and we carried out the operations procedures for them, including fractions and general surgery.
Jebel Moon resident Mejdi Adam Hussein blamed the government for neglecting the escalating conflict in the Darfur region. Adam says despite the signing of the Juba peace agreement between the government and the several armed groups last year, Darfur has never been stable.
Every human being has a limit to patience, and when that goes beyond the limit, you will do anything. Incidents keep on happening. Our people have been killed every time and our property looted. And yet the government does not do anything. Their response always comes after 2 to 3 days when things have gone out of hand.
Under the Juba peace deal, the various forces were supposed to jointly deploy 12,000 security forces in Darfur to secure the area and protect civilians. Speaking to the Darfur 24 TV channel on Wednesday from Jebel Moon, West Darfur acting Governor Khamis Abdallah condemned the fighting, saying it violates the ceasefire in the peace agreement. He vowed to form an investigative committee to find the causes of the conflict and bring the perpetrators to justice.
For us, this conflict is unacceptable and it should not continue under different names. Some call it that it is between the farmers and cattle keepers, and others call it ethnic. But regardless of the nature of the conflict, as the state security committee, we will not accept this situation to continue.
Renewed clashes erupted between different groups across the Darfur region shortly after the joint United Nations and African Union peacekeeping mission ended its mandate in December last year. For VOA News, I'm Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Authorities have found the bodies of six people who went missing after unidentified gunmen attacked in Jonglei State on Tuesday. A seventh person was found alive. The Akobo County Commissioner says a total of eight South Sudanese refugees, including students, were returning from Ethiopia to visit their relatives when they were ambushed. The attackers reportedly headed east toward the neighboring Greater Pibor administrative area. For VOA News, Deng Gai Deng reports from Bor.
Akobo County Commissioner Gadwich Reth Deng confirmed that police and young men found six bodies. Deng says two people survived the attack.
Yeah, yesterday at around 5 p.m., then I managed to get the UU into the place of attack. Then I talked to them. They found six people dead, and the one who arrived in the hospital with one survivor and one sustained.
Commissioner Deng says the deceased are South Sudanese refugees, including students. They were returning from Ethiopia to visit their relatives in Akobo West when they were waylaid by bandits suspected of being from the Pibor administrative area. Deng says he does not understand why intercommunal attacks are continuing when peace talks are ongoing between communities from Pibor and Jonglei.
They carried three attacks. This is the fourth attack in the same place. The second attack. Then they abduct two children. Then the first attack they abduct one child. Then the third attack they kill two young men and they take their gun. This is the fourth attack now. And whenever there is an attack, then we talk to the local authority, telling them this has been happening. We just talk to the youth, convene them, let them listen to what people are saying. It's good that we can live in peace.
Commissioner Deng says armed young men from the area are pursuing the assailants who headed east toward the Greater Pibor administrative area. He says local authorities should work to stop the armed youth from attacking other communities, or the Greater Jonglei region could once again flank into deadly intercommunal violence. Jai Adingora Alwal, the Minister for Information in the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, said yesterday that he was not informed about the attack and could neither confirm nor deny that the alleged assailants came from his area. Lokalia Mayor, the Chief Administrator for the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, said armed young people were in the area of Nanam about 2 weeks ago and he didn't know what they were doing there. Ameya is calling on the national government to expedite the disarmament plan in Greater Jonglei to prevent armed civilians from harming each other. The officials have repeatedly said the lack of communication networks and feeder roads to ease movement have posed challenges to Pibor authorities in curbing criminal activity in remote areas. In 2019, President Salva Kiir approved a plan to intensify joint police patrols along the borders of the Greater Pibor Administrative Area and Jonglei State to contain cattle raids and child abductions. Under the plan, a police force of 2,500 young men and women from different ethnic communities would undergo training and work to maintain law and order between the Pibor area and neighboring Jonglei State. President Kiir instructed the National Police Service to make arrangements for the training and deployment of the new recruits in the border area of Gadiang, but the plan has yet to materialize. Kiri in January said he will no longer intervene if communities in Jonglei engage in fighting. Attacks and counterattacks involving cattle raids and child abductions have continued among communities in the Greater Pibor Administrative Area and Jonglei State, despite several peace agreements reached between the communities. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
80 South Sudanese have been sentenced to jail in the Sudanese capital Khartoum for violently storming the Sudanese Supreme Court on Tuesday. A South Sudan activist based in Khartoum says those sentenced were protesting after the court sentenced 8 South Sudanese to death for failing to present in court their relative who allegedly escaped to South Sudan after killing a Sudanese man in 2018. For VOA News, Viola Elias files from Juba.
Khartoum-based South Sudanese activist Akol Malong says the 80 individuals who violently stormed the Supreme Court on Tuesday will serve their jail sentence in Kobar prison in High Yusuf. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus via phone, Malong says they are thought to be from Mayom County in Unity. She says on Tuesday the individuals had come to hear the court issue a sentence in case involving 8 members of their community. When the court sentenced the 8 to death, the others immediately stormed the court building. Malong says in 2018, a South Sudanese was allegedly accused of killing a Sudanese man. She says the suspect fled to South Sudan and the court issued an arrest warrant for 8 of his relatives for refusing to bring him to court. Malong says after the South Sudanese stormed the court on Tuesday, they were arrested and convicted that same day. The 80 men and women who will serve different jail terms ranging from 3 years for men and 6 months for women.
Those sentenced on Tuesday, men were jailed for 2 years imprisonment and women 6 months in prison. There are some young men among the convicted who were jailed for 3 years. The 80 individuals started throwing stones at the judges and police immediately after they heard the court verdict sentencing the 8 community members to death.
Malong criticized the behaviors of the protesters, saying what they did in court on Tuesday was unacceptable. Malong says she and South Sudan Ambassador to Sudan Mayen Dud have been following up the case and had appealed to those sentenced to death to bring the mother suspect to court, but she says no one listened to their plea. Malong says South Sudanese cases in Khartoum are becoming too much.
South Sudanese problems are too much for me. Every time they do something, the police call me to come and talk to my people. I am even tired of their problems because either they are fighting or killing themselves or fighting among their communities or they are killing the Sudanese people here in Khartoum. I said before that our authorities should come and relocate all the prisoners to Juba because even the prison is now full of South Sudanese.
Malong says in the past, South Sudanese officials in Khartoum met with different communities and urged them to peacefully coexist. In May this year, Sudanese judiciary authorities sentenced 600 South Sudanese refugees in Khartoum to 6 months in prison after they were convicted of intercommunal fighting, which led to the death of 7 people. Earlier this month, 60 South Sudanese were sentenced to 6 months in prison in El Obeid for allegedly entering Sudan. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, today is the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, and the United Nations says more than 650,000 women and girls were able to access gender-based violence services despite restrictions related to the pandemic.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Where do you get your health advice from?
Sometimes I get my health advice from my grandmother who is at home. When I'm sick that I can't control myself, she'll help.
I get my health advice from my friend, colleague, who live together. We also know about those who have been experiencing more problems about health. They don't advise me through phone. We talk, we chat, discuss everything.
My dad, because my dad is a doctor.
I'd say I get my health advice from various places, the internet, my parents, because I have, my mother is a nurse.
My health advice, I get it on the internet. If I need something on how to deal with obesity, I get it on the internet. Anything I need pertaining to health advice is on the internet.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, recent data from Kenya shows that about 41% of women reported having experienced physical or sexual violence from their husbands or partners.
The International Day for Elimination of Violence Against Women and Girls is observed on 25th of November, with domestic violence being identified as a global public health problem. The World Health Organization, WHO, estimates that almost one-third of women experience some form of physical or sexual violence from an intimate partner in their lifetime. WHO says at least 38% of all murders of women are committed by their intimate partners. A Kenyan, Florence Kea, who is also a survivor of gender-based violence, is running a safe house for women who undergo sexual violence. She says most women, despite being rescued, still go back to their abusive partners because most lack financial muscles.
I have done this for the last 6 years, rescue women and rescue girls who have gone through sexual violence. It happens so sad that women still go back to their abusers. I wouldn't say majority of them, but some of the women would still go back to the abusers. Economically, if you are not stable economically and you're going through violence, women sometimes look at their families and think that that man, as much as they abuse them, they'll still provide for their families.
Evelyn Boa from Agape Woman and Child Empowerment Foundation from Kibera Slums in Nairobi is addressing physical and sexual violence, which she says are on the rise in Kenya.
What we normally have discussions that are geared towards encouraging women to speak out, but also we train them on how they can be agents of change in the community. And these women are survivors of different forms of violence, physical and sexual violence, which is on the rise. And this is affecting all women of reproductive age.
Violence against women and girls continue to be the most prevalent and pressing human rights issue in the world today. The executive director, UN Women, Sima Sami, said that more than 70% of women have experienced gender-based violence in crisis settings.
Violence against women is a global crisis. In all of our own neighborhoods, there are women and girls living in danger. Around the world, conflict and human rights violations are exacerbating violence against women. More than 70% of women have experienced gender-based violence.
The UN statistics show that in all corners of the world, helplines for violence against women saw an increase in reports. Ms. Sami says violence against women go unreported in many parts of the world.
In countries both rich and poor, gender prejudice has fueled acts of violence toward women and girls. Violence against women often goes unreported, silenced by stigma, shame, or fear of the perpetrators, and fear of a justice system that does not work for women.
WHO reports that across the world, 27% of women aged 15 to 49 years who have been in a relationship have been subjected to some form of physical or sexual violence by their intimate partners. Today, the International Day for Elimination of Violence Against Women also opens some hopes. It begins the annual 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence, a series of events aimed at creating real change. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
The Tanzania government has reversed course to allow pregnant girls and adolescent mothers to attend school after giving birth. Nevaile Mena, secretary for the Tanzania Editors Forum, says the law was heavily enforced during the late President John Magufuli's government. He tells VOA's James Batty relaxing the restriction now doesn't come as a surprise because Tanzania currently has a female president, Samia Suluhu Hassan.
Pressure from the public, from civil society, from different players, even from the donors or developing partners, the Red Band in particular, that the school dropout, especially for girls, was very high. And the punishment, chasing them out from the school, was not acceptable. Actually, indeed, the government started this move a couple years ago and had a policy in place suggesting that these school girls should go back to school. And even before Magufuli died, years ago, the then vice president, now who is the president right now, announced that the government will start re-enrolling the school girls who will be impregnated, so they should go and have their babies. And then after they give birth, they should come back to school. But 1 week after that announcement, then the president came out and stated clearly that under his leadership should not allow anyone who got pregnant while schooling to go back to school.
To what degree do you think the lifting of this law has to do with the fact that Tanzania has a woman president?
Having Mama Samia or President Madam Samia in place as a president has its contribution on this particular decision.
What happened to the men who got the girls pregnant? Were these men ever punished?
The law punishes also the boys, not only the boys, schoolboys, but also whoever caught having love affairs with a schoolgirl. If found guilty, the penalty is 30 years in jail, like raping and so on. So it is very dangerous to engage in love with any schoolgirl or schoolboy in Tanzania.
Nevaili Mina is secretary for Tanzania's Editors Forum. He was speaking to VOA's James Batty from the capital, Dar es Salaam. South Africa, like many countries once struggling to get COVID-19 vaccines, is now stuck with an oversupply. Its health department is asking pharmaceutical companies to delay deliveries of jabs as it tries to clear stock on hand. The continent's second largest economy is the African nation worst hit by the pandemic, recording almost 3 million infections and 90,000 deaths. Darren Taylor reports.
A fourth wave looms, but the health department's battling to get needles into arms.
The vaccination numbers have slowed down, and it's concerning that it's slowed so much.
Health Director General Dr. Nicholas Crisp is coordinating South Africa's vaccine rollout. He says it's averaged 106,000 doses a day over the past 2 weeks.
We should be by now over 250,000 a day. We have vaccine, we have the capability of vaccinating, we have a lot of people who need to be vaccinated, we've got a lot of different initiatives that are targeting outreach clinics, mass vaccination sites, private vaccinations in pharmacies and other sites. There are a lot of public clinics that are vaccinating, but they are all reporting that they are not full and they could be seeing a lot more people.
Department officials told VOA that South Africa has almost 17 million doses in stock. Only 35% of citizens are fully vaccinated. Crisp says several factors are hampering efforts to immunize 60% of a population of 60 million before the end of the year.
It's complicated, and part of it is that we lost a bit of momentum in the week that we didn't have vaccine at all clinics, and it was a little bit difficult for people to get to sites, or a bit irritating for them to get to sites and then be turned away. So the public were frustrated during that week. I think that's part of it. The other is that there's a bit of vaccination fatigue. You know, we're out of the third wave in parts of the country and people have relaxed their guard a bit. I think also that there is some hesitancy. People wait and see. There's a lot of noise by anti-vaxxers who can't see the obvious evidence that vaccinations save lives.
South Africa has a small but vociferous anti-vaxxer group that's spreading disinformation and lies, says Crisp, that the jabs are dangerous and even kill people.
And it seems that it's definitely less than 10% of the adult public who are what we would regard as anti-vaxxers, people who are dead against vaccination for either religious or other reasons. That means the remaining 90% are either hesitant, listening and wondering what's going to happen and watching and waiting and seeing, or they are highly committed and have already been vaccinated.
His department's launched a mass communication campaign to recruit more people to the cause, as he puts it.
So we would like to appeal to the public, look at the facts, consider the testimonies of the many people who are telling us about their personal experiences in hospital and of friends and family of theirs who were not vaccinated, who got into serious trouble and or died. We know that vaccines save lives. We are very clear that there's sufficient data on that. We also know that vaccines are like any other vaccine, do have side effects, and we do know that adverse events are reported. But the numbers of adverse events that happen are minute compared with the complications that we are seeing from COVID infection.
Crisp says proof of the efficacy of the vaccines lies in the fact that not a single healthcare worker, who were the first to get jabs in February, has died of COVID-19 since then, and very few have fallen seriously ill with the disease. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and the Africa Center for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's all we have for you this Thursday. I am Charlton Doki. Thanks for allowing us into your vehicles, homes, and on your phones. Remember to always wash your hands with soap. Practice social distancing and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect yourself and others from coronavirus. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for COVID-19. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Kuruju ya odeza mata kuruju ka yuma uza mata kuruju ka waladi uza mata kuruju ka yaba uza mata kuruju ka iti Kalena kuruju ya odesa mata kuruju ja kuma kalena kuruju uza mata kuruju ja uwaladi kalena kuruju uza